So I've got a story to tell you.
Does it involve Anthony Mason?
No.
And Biggie Smalls? Was it Biggie? It was Biggie, wasn't it?
I've moved to big ice cubes, and my ice cubes don't clink anymore.
How big are big ice cubes?
Like 4 centimeters by 4 centimeters by 4 centimeter cubes.
No, like what? Why do you need an ice cube that big?
Because it melts slower, so it doesn't water down your scotch as much.
You can also not fit any scotch in your glass, unless your glass is literally a bucket.
My glass is pretty big. This is not the story I was going
to
tell.
So we used to have ice cubes that were literally it was like a little silicon mold, and it was sort of
icebergs.
It was icebergs and Titanics.
Mm.
So you put one of each in your drink and jiggle it around and see what would happen.
Ooh, that's nice.
So that's the thing. How long? I mean, that's kind of a question of how soon is too soon. I mean. It's like more than 1,000 people died on the Titanic.
I'm pretty sure the Titanic's not too soon.
Well, more than 1,000 people died on that fucking thing. And yet, you know, 80 years later, I went to the local ANP show, which is like the local agricultural and pastoral show. And there was like an inflatable sinking Titanic slide for the kids. It was like a Titanic on a 45-degree angle or 30-degree angle. You know, where it looked like it was sinking, and you could climb up one side and slide down the other. I was like, are we going to have, like, you know, the exploding Challenger kids' rides one day? I mean, where exactly are we going with this? Twin Towers?
Mate, that might be a little bit too soon, but...
Right now. Right. What is your story that I've interrupted you with?
This
is
sorry.
It's me pouring a nice glass... Of
this is actually from Helensville. This is a topical story because we've talked about this before, and it does pertain to music. So, I've got that playlist that I play for the boys when we go to daycare, and if we go on drives, you know, it's their playlist. It's sort of their music, and Curtis is in before and after school care, so he's been coming home with song requests to put on the playlist. So,
it's you know.
No, Ed Sheeran. Did ask for Katy Perry, which is a bit, okay, you know, if I have to. But,
You listen to fucking Lily Allen, so what's the difference?
Oh, no, there is a massive difference. Come on. There's a massive difference.
No, got the same number of letters.
So he comes home and he goes, do you know the song What Does the Fox Say? And I'm like, I don't know that song. He's like,
oh, I know that song.
You know that song, right?
Because so my kids were your kids' age at the time that song was around. That makes
right.
Sense.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay. So yeah, that's cool. Like, I'm not the whole thing with this playlist is I don't make you know I put Taylor Swift on there for a while. I don't sort of I'm not trying to curate it. I'm just letting them listen to whatever, and if you know it. The eldest twin the other day said the Carly Rae song came on. And he's like, this is a nice song. And I was like, oh, God, I can't take that off just yet, can I? But anyways.
Pop is, and there's a reason pop is called pop. It's short for popular. Yeah. It's full of little melodies that are pleasing to the ear.
So I've never heard this song, right? What Does the Fox Say? So
it's a great song.
It's a fucking awesome song. So I put it on. And
I wouldn't go that far.
No. Hang on. I've got a reason for why I think it's a fully awesome song.
It's like a slightly less shit Crazy Frog.
So admittedly, I've only heard this song like 5 times. I haven't heard it the probably 10,000 times that you've heard it. So I put this song on. We're sitting there and I pull it up on Spotify and I'm because, you know, I want to ask Curtis if I've got the right song. So I play it and I'm thinking, oh, this is fairly, you know, saccharine sort of dance pop until you hit the chorus and it sounds like Keith Flint from The Prodigy decided to
until they drop it, they drop the bass.
Drop the bass and do the fucking crazy chorus. I was like, were The Prodigy involved in this song? Were they all on drugs? I don't know, but the kids just go fucking nuts with that chorus. It's hilarious. It's quite a funny song when you're driving home and they all just go you know, like the ease have kicked in and the rave started in the backseat of the car.
It's like that scene from Wayne's World where the rock part drops in Bohemian Rhapsody and everyone just starts headbanging.
Yes, that's exactly like that. When Curtis goes, "What does the fuck say?" It just fucking starts going mental. I was like, what?
And then it all goes a bit Skrillex.
It does go very Skrillex. Anyway, that was my music parenting is a very interesting experience, I have to say.
Once they have Spotify, YouTube, and headphones, then
You sort of lose contact with what they're doing.
Not really, but it's sort of you don't have to listen to it, which is when you know. I don't ever need to get ready to wiggle ever again, but we're well and truly out of that space.
We've never really been in that space with music, with TV shows, but not with music. But even though I'm not
TV shows, can you explain to me what a TV is?
It's what you watch all your sport on, mate.
No, that's a laptop.
No,
seriously, we realised that how little we actually turn the television on these days. And more to the point, how little my kids turn the television on. Not at all. Like, they never watch television. The only person who watches anything on, you know, terrestrial television, and it's not really, it's pay TV, with a cable in it.
Well, when I say TV, TV for us is Netflix and iView. Yeah. So,
well, that's, that's not really TV.
I thought that the CRJ comment from Hilo was very interesting though, because
it's CRJ offering... is not a Honda trail bike. It's, that's CRF. CRJ is Carly Rae Jepsen. She won a George's Kids.
I thought everyone who listened to this podcast would be fairly familiar with that by now. I just thought it was interesting that he offered an opinion about a song. Because it's usually with the boys, you ask them if they like something and they'll give you an opinion. But they don't really offer up an opinion unprompted like that very often. So, yeah, I'm glad that they're developing an opinion about music anyway.
You will like it a lot less when they start offering up opinions about your cooking.
Yeah.
Because they will do that and they will hate everything you do.
Yeah, that's all right. Just fucking eat what they're given.
I thought that too. But you don't price in the fact that the other one is going to go, "No, I can't let my babies go hungry." And you just get, undermined. So fuck that.
Yeah, no, well, Vanessa's not that interesting in cooking. So shall we talk about the band that I thought...
interesting to make Mega Ring noodles.
Should we talk about the band that I thought was an old band but is in fact a new band and is not a nightclub in Brisbane?
And probably, you know, it might have been to a nightclub in Brisbane, but they're resolutely from Brunswick. That's Press Club. Not Press Gang. There's no sign of Spike or whoever Julia Sawala's character was. These are some four kids from Brunswick in inner suburban Melbourne. This is their debut album. It is being talked about on the internet. Described as garage punk, but that's kind of... Garage punk is a different thing, and that isn't it. I mean, garage punk is more that line of band that started with the MC5 and the Stooges and, you know...
Well, I think you nailed it with the Chrissy Amphlett aesthetic, isn't it?
Yeah, I was having a chat Ace McWicket and Johnny Potts, a friend of the at the Drive Through Pod, actually gave him their name, about this album, because they're both big fans of it. And my first reaction to this, and it's always been the reaction to this I've had through it, was just this irritation with the production treatment they put on her vocal. Because they've put...
some kind of compression filter on her voice, and I don't really understand why they did that.
Because you normally do that if you're dealing with someone who's got a weak vocal. I don't think she's like, got weak vocals at all. I think she fucks out.
What's our Adelaide friends?
I don't have any friends in Adelaide. They killed
me. Nah, you know, they're like the Choir Boys 2.0. Who am I thinking of? I think we're
not Bad Dreams. Both of the,
Bad Dreams, yeah.
That wasn't so much a filter, but it was more the way the production choices were made there. And yeah, actually, Bad Dreams is a good. I mean, my first note was, this isn't really garage punk. It feels more like a female voiced Bad Dreams, or Rubens, or even the slightly more on brand These Are Death Rays.
If you took the kind of AM radio filter off the vocals, it's interesting you talked about the production because. I'll come back to the point about the production though because I
had some surprises when I looked into it.
My notes on this were, this is like a choose your own production adventure, because I was listening to this album and the songs where it's all balls to the wall, flat out howling, don't interest me as much as the songs where there's a bit of light and shade.
Yep.
And you know, they pull her back and they don't let her like fucking just howl the whole song. And I was like, oh, this would be awesome if they'd had a producer that goes, these songs are great, you should do more of these songs.
Funny you say it'd be awesome if they had a producer. So they did all this themselves. This was recorded, okay. Produced and mixed by the band, by themselves, in a room. And I think that all the good that comes with that and all the bad that comes with that is the story of this album. There's so much. I mean, the thing about this album is they're always talked about in terms of, in the context of their live energy. And this was all recorded live to tape. So there was a little bit of double tracking of some drums on some tracks. There's actually a good track-by-track explanation on a website. Not their website, but there was a story about what they did on each album and what the inspirations were and the production choices they'd made. But generally, it was live to tape, and they were just thrashing through. And part of the reason they might have thrown that filter, like the production choice on her vocals, was A, they didn't mic her, they didn't mic her up properly. But B, at some points they were tearing the shit. She tore the shit out of her own voice, so they might have had to do that to have consistency across the album. But I don't know if that was a good move.
I think Suburbia and Trading Punches were my two favourite songs. After I listened to it again today, I was like, okay, well, that's what I feel. I'd be really interested to hear other people that like this album and find out which songs they like. Because, I know people that would totally like this.
Headwreck is the track that just everyone bangs on about, which is the second song, the single, for want of a better word.
See, I think Suburbia is a way better song than Headwreck. I just think there would be other people that would love that full-on, you know, thrash wailing the whole song. Like that's what they would like. That is what they would want more of. And I think this is a really interesting band in that there's a little bit in there for everyone.
Yeah, it's weird because they are almost like a reverse Bad Dreams, because instead of having a big name, you know, famous in the 70s and 80s producer, they have no producer. And their problem is that they're affecting something, that they're picking up an affectation. It's that they're not, there are no grown-ups in the room, for want of a better word. And that is fantastic, because the energy is completely unrestrained and they go off in all kinds of directions. But it'll do with just a little bit of channeling. Not if it blunts the force, but maybe they just need a good recording engineer to mic your fucking vocals up properly. Because every time I listen to it, I know it was it's only a little thing, but it just fucking shat me. It was like, why are you doing this? Why would you do this? She can fucking sing. Why are you
fucking sing like this?
No, it's
a little bit like me listening to an ESPN podcast where it's like,
it's exactly it. She sounds like
you guys are a multi-million dollar fucking media company. I could provide you with the tools you need to make this sound competent that would cost a couple of $100. Like, it's not that expensive, and you could make everyone sound really good, and you could, you know, create a podcast where it sounds like a radio studio.
And given that, it's clearly that these kids have massive amounts of, like, they're good at this, they know what they're doing, it makes you think it was a choice. And then we come back to why did you do it? I don't agree with that choice.
It would be really interesting to see if they get a producer next time.
Whether that fucks with their
aesthetic. Yeah, whether it's better or worse, because, like, you know, the funny, the one that I always come back to is the Hoods, who, you know, they're also self-produced essentially, because, you know, because that's the nature of their music. But
they're at a stage where nobody's telling them anything. Like, no one can tell them anything. Whereas these guys are self-produced because you know, they don't have anyone around them.
But it's not even that. It's as they've gotten better and made more money, they've been able to afford better gear, and the sound just sounds more professional and more polished. But is that a better sound?
Well, it's also because they had to move away from samples.
That's right. They moved in. No, but it's not so much this. I think their samples, like the music that they're using now, is every bit as good as the samples that they were using. It's just, it sounds too slick for me. It's like they're not building the rawness back into the music. And Dan from Coolism, like, he used to collect a whole heap of analog gear because he would record these pristine recordings, right, that were just immaculate, you know, no noise or dirtiness or rawness to them at all. And then he'd fucking re-record them back onto these dirty reel-to-reel tape decks that he, you know, rescued out of the back room of the alley, and then re-record them back onto the digital, and they would have that lo-fi dirty sound that he was looking for. So even though he'd start with this, you know, amazingly pristine recording, he would end up with something that sounded like it was recorded in a garage in 1992. I'll be really interested to see what their next album's like, to see whether a producer makes them better or makes them worse, because I think they're on, you know, this album's going to take off.
What needs to be said is we've said a lot of negative things. This is a pretty good album.
There's a fucking good album. And there's so much good stuff in here.
The odd little discordant bits that are the only problems with, you know, they're the things that make you think, fuck, why did you do that? You didn't have to do that. So,
But that's the thing, is I actually think that the decisions that they made that we don't like, and I'm talking like we probably don't like different decisions. But this album is so varied and so interesting that other people would go, oh, I don't like that decision, which is a different thing than we don't like. I think there's enough in this album for everybody that likes this style of music.
But what I do like is the fact that all the decisions that were made were theirs. Apparently the lead singer's, you know, got a graphic design degree, so she's done the cover and she writes the fucking the press notes. The press notes are incredibly, you know, self-aware. The musical embodiment of a generation experience impermanence in every way. Translation?
But
while they were recording the album, she had to move out of her house because it was being demolished for flats.
Yeah, right.
Because she lives in Brunswick.
But the fact that you can do this now and don't have to have a producer is really interesting, in the fact that, like, I'm sure other bands have done it, you know, back even in the analog days, but, you know, that do-it-yourself aesthetic
that DIY live to tape, fuck it, let's have a thrash.
I've got technology sitting on my desk right now, right, that lets you plug 6 XLRs into a recording device that will record something that's going to sound better than pretty much most things that were recorded in the 70s. Like, that's amazing. And it's cheap. You know, it's the democratization of tech that allows you to produce, like, because this doesn't sound like it was produced by absolute amateurs. It sounds pretty good. You might quibble about the choices that they've made, but it doesn't sound like it was made for $1.50.
No. It was only until I looked into it that I found out they didn't have a producer who'd made a deliberate brave decision, that this had all been DIY'd.
I really like this album. This is going on my shortlist. I found the more that I listened to it, the more I forgave the bits I didn't like, and the more I really dug the bits that I did like.
Yeah, it's grown on me a little bit.
Which is funny because the other album, Sarah Blasco, I really liked this album the first time I listened to it, and the more and more I listened to it, the flaws jumped out at me. Like, I find her... When her vocal gets really melodramatic, I find it hard to take. I find the songs where she is a bit more low-key and a bit more introspective and not sort of strident.
She's not doing bootleg Tori Amos.
Yeah, that's right. I found this a really interesting album the first time I listened to it, and I got a little less in love with it every time I listened to it subsequently.
Feels like she's been around forever, but then I looked it up and her first album was sort of 2004, so although that is a fair while ago, I suppose.
Did her tour at the Rev for that album, actually, which was fucking awesome, and that was a great show.
So you have, this is basically you explaining that you've met her.
No, I don't know whether I did. I was usually too busy to meet the talent, unless it was hip hop, because I was a fanboy, and then I'll probably embarrass myself anyway. So, vocals are a really weird thing in that the tone of them, like the lyrics affect you a lot more than me, but the tone really affects me. Like I can't get over a tone of a vocal that I don't like. And when she was like full emotional swelling, it just didn't do it for me.
It felt kind of like, I mean, I haven't listened to a hell of a lot of Sarah Blasco, but I mean, apart from the stuff you get exposed to on Triple J and through Artist 100s and stuff, but it felt like pretty much kind of off the plan Sarah Blasco. It was sort of beats, breathy angelic vocals, strings, piano, loves her own face on the cover. It just seems to be, you know, as above, so below. I think it was a Stonefield album.
I quite liked her musical choices in this album. I thought it was a little bit more interesting.
To make
than
music, that's a choice she made.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, I like the synths and... There's a certain throwback element that I sort of like, and I didn't mind the music in this compared to some of the stuff that she's done before. Sounded like, you know, straight out of the acoustic song singer songwriter playbook.
Yeah,
this sounded a little bit more varied than that. But yeah, it's funny because I like this a lot more than the Press Club album the first listen through, and every listen after that, it's slowly, you know, flipped more and more towards the Press Club over Sarah Blasco. I know you're going to talk to Ben in a couple of weeks. He loved this album. He really, really loved this album. So I'd be interested to see what he...
I don't have anything to say. It must be him berating us for our lack of interest in it.
Yeah. I was really interested in it, and I actually think she's grown as a songwriter. I think it's a little bit more complex than her early stuff, but yeah, in the end that vocal just was a bit too over the top for me. So
yeah, it didn't really do anything particularly for me. It just sort of floated around in the... It's one of those albums I listened to a couple of times and I never really it never really sunk its teeth into me. I don't really feel like it's... And that's, you know, it's not my genre of music, so it's got to do a lot to do that. And but, I mean, some tracks were... I mean, Phantom was a good track. I think it felt like there were more interesting stuff at the start of the album, then it just sort of had a bit of a long tail. It didn't really retain... it didn't sort of retain that... Do or capture or retain that interest. So... Never mind. It'll make some people happy.
So, Are You Experienced is such a better album than Thriller.
Well, you can only really compare it to because it was released the same year as Sgt. Pepper's. It was released earlier in that year.
Oh, well, it's a far superior album than Sgt. Pepper's, but for sure.
I went back and listened, and Jimi Hendrix released two better albums than Sgt. Pepper's in 1967, because at the end of the year he released Axl's Bold as Love, which isn't quite as good as You Experienced, but it's still a fucking good album. And then he released Electric Ladyland in 1968, which was the quote-unquote classic album from the TV series. Although I don't think it's... He tended to go more into the psychedelia and away from... It would kind of help that this is... Are You Experienced was his debut album, because he had to sort of still have a pop rock structure. And why that was cool was because even the basic kind of pop songs that he kind of felt like he had to have in the album, they're still amazingly layered and complicated, and they've got that kind of twist that Hendrix brings to the party. You're only a couple of years removed from the Beatles giving it She Loves You, Yeah, 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 and you've got these really interesting and just his vocal delivery, and he was never that confident in his vocal delivery, but his vocal delivery is so kind of sly and sort of conversational.
Conversational is a great... Do you know what I struggled with this album? Is when I was listening to it at work and when I listened to it on headphones, it's such an enjoyable album that I just slipped into enjoying it, and I found it really hard to analyze it.
Mm.
Like, every time I started listening to it, I just slipped into this mood where I was like, fuck, this is just great music. I slipped into that, you know, where you're just listening to it on headphones and you're just, you know, tapping your toe and just enjoying it.
There's so many bangers on it. There's so many... I mean, I used to have a Hendrix Greatest Hits album, and literally half the fucking Greatest Hits album is this album. Mm. You know, it's most... I mean, I only released sort of four studio albums, but so much of it was, you know, and particularly, I mean, it depends which version you listen to. So the version I originally bought on CD was this green cover version, which is the original UK release. There's a yellow covered version which has a different track order, and a different version of Red House, which is the kind of the blues standard that finishes the yellow version. That was the American version. It's kind of like version 1.5. Hendrix preferred the American release because he preferred the cover of it and he preferred the track order. But I put the green label version on there because that's the version that was the most relevant to me. Although, having listened to them again back to back, I kind of feel like Hendrix was right. The revised American track order flows a little bit better, because with the original UK version, the album kind of settles into a psychedelic haze in the middle. There's quite a few kind of laid-back psychedelic tracks in the middle, and then it kind of comes back out of it. Whereas it seems to... The mix of being sort of spaced out and tripping out on acid shit and, you know, upbeat rock and roll, pop, all that sort of stuff, is a lot better spaced in the American version. So very rarely do I say that the American version is better, but in this case, I think I was wrong.
It'd be very interesting to see if Jimi Hendrix had had the press club treatment and been able to make all his own decisions, and because I would imagine that the record company and the producer would have been, you know, very heavily influenced in this.
Yeah, his manager was right on his case in those days. So he was sort of guiding the whole process. And that's kind of why the story of making Electric Ladyland is maybe more interesting. Because that was the point at which he was splitting from his UK manager, who had helped him along a lot, really helped him along, but obviously was constricting his development in some other ways. And also he was rebelling against, because he'd had, because he was set up with Mitch Mitchell was the drummer, and Noel Redding, who was this kind of sullen bass player. But he eventually chafed against having those guys and went off and had his own band, which was the Band of Gypsies. So instead of the Jimi Hendrix Experience, and that's probably why they picked Electric Ladyland as the classic album because it's a more interesting story of the making of that album, because he was kind of going through this career migration from being, because he started as almost like a session guitarist to having this Jimi Hendrix experience band in the UK, because he made it in the UK. He then went to America afterwards. But he was a much bigger star in the UK than he was in the States.
Yeah, it's a reminder that the UK used to be
important for music.
Yeah, like seriously important in music.
Well, it still kind of is. I mean, the NME have closed down, but that's probably just because they were shit and had a lot of bad opinions.
Yes, well, I think I can't remember what there was something that you retweeted that was pretty. I was like, well, maybe they should shut down.
Oh, it was sort of something about Matt Bellamy from Muse and someone else have like a Beatles cover band and they're going to South by Southwest. And I'm like, I have no idea why your magazine is going broke. I couldn't tell you why that is. Either way, the American version track one is Purple Haze. The UK version track one is Foxy Lady. You can't go wrong with that as a fucking album opener, because they are just amazing.
That's pretty good. All right, so what do you got for me that's new this week, Doc?
What have I got for you that's new? I'm going to throw a... Because English music is over, I'm going to throw an English album at you by a band from Bristol called Tax the Heat. This is their second album. I happened to be listening to their first album earlier in the week on the Stereotype device. And the other half asked me afterwards, who were they? And I told her who they were, and she went off and bought their album. So there's a there's a thumbs up on that one. It's kind of Maximum R&B kind of.
We really need to nail down that Spotify sponsorship for this podcast so that our significant others don't go and buy albums.
Well, this is the thing. I said, why don't you just listen to it on Spotify? I said, I don't use Spotify. And the kids use her Spotify account. So if she did, it'd be full of Minecraft songs. And what does the
what
fox
does
say?
The fox say? That is totally going to be the intro music for this week.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Definitely not.
Oh, what
download
else
the
got?
MP3, clip it off, and put something better on there. Maybe the outro.
Oh dear.
So yeah, they've got a new album out called Change Your Position, and I've heard a few tracks on the release radars, and they sound like they would be a fun band. So I use and recommend Tax the Heat.
All right, what else?
The other album I was going to suggest for this coming week, which will be a very exciting week in the history of the Bulls podcast for reasons we might get into in a little bit, is by a band called The Sword. Now, they are from Austin, Texas. They've been around since kind of the middle aughts, and they like to play the loud rock and roll of the stoner fuzz variety that Fu Manchu were kind enough to introduce us to a week or so ago.
Well,
They're a little bit less fuzz, and they're a little bit more. Like their previous albums had been a little bit more kind of fantasy, sci-fi, fucking, swords and goblins and fucking wizards and shit themed. But this album seems like they're a bit more real in their things. It's new album's called Used Future. It's got like a Bonneville Salt Flats kind of appearance to it. Those are the two albums I would like the three of us to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I said,
do you want to sizzle that before I get to the classic?
And this could all fall through by the time we talk next week. But this time next week, I will be in my ancestral homeland of Northern New South Wales, as will Mr. Beasley, as will our special Metallica correspondent, Mr. Adam H. Photo.
Don't you mean your special Michael Jackson?
Special Thriller is Trash 6, Mission to Moscow. No, hang on. What was 6? Anyway.
I watched Police Academy 2 the other day.
Tits.
I don't know why it was on Stan, and I was like, it's hilariously bad. Oh, it's hilarious, but also bad.
It's just so desperately bad. It's like, hi, it's the girl, woman who's only there to show her tits. But, I mean, Mike, the sound effect guy was always funny.
Yeah.
That was pitched at the level of a 10-year-old boy, so that always worked. Mm. But yeah, so our special pop music defending, the pop music defender has logged on. Maybe joining us, should be joining us live in person. Well, not live in terms of live to tape, podcast. Or
live as in we will be sitting across from each other drinking beer, and you know, if we bring up Thriller, maybe there will be punch-ons, and Adam's a lot bigger than me, so I'll probably get hurt. Yes.
Live as in you'd like to finish the show being alive. Here's a gentle giant. It's me you got to worry about. So what's the classic album that we get to listen to for this glorious week of listening to music?
Well, you actually brought it up in the last last episode with Adam, and it made me think, because I owned this album, and in period, I listened to it quite a lot. But I can only really remember one song. And it is undoubtedly a classic album. And I don't know why it's dropped off my radar. So this week we're going to listen to Whispering The Downward Jack. Spiral by Nine Inch Nails.
I'm on holiday. When do I want to listen to that?
I just think it's... I love this album in 1995,
you know,
94.
What? I think, and whenever I listen to old industrial music, and this is just a prediction, I don't want to colour anyone's impression, but it just seems so fucking mawkishly pathetic. I'm so depressed. It comes off. I mean, we will probably never listen to Billy Corgan ever again after his ridiculous fucking jizz fest. Tinfoil hat appearance on the InfoWars cunt show. But even so, Melancholy Infinite Sadness was a trash album in 1994, and I can't imagine how awful it would be in 2018. But it's just so... Most of that teen angst, farmery that happened in that stuff just doesn't date so well, because it's so... uncloaked. It's just so overt.
Well, that's what
so
I want.
Obviously,
that's what
Dad won't let me borrow the car.
That's what I want to see, because I don't know. Like, is this album more influential in some of the stuff that comes after, or is it, you know, a moment in time and it never really influenced anything? But
yeah, well, we did that new Ministry album on the episode that you weren't able to make, that Adam and I did, and it was fucking awful. But I wonder whether we misremembered how good Ministry were in the first place.
Mm.
So it's going to be interesting to go back and look at The Downward Spiral and sort of see where we are with it.
Yeah, it was funny. I was talking to a few people about Cat Empire this week, and...
trying to find somebody who agreed with you that they weren't shit.
Oh, mate, I've got lots of people that agree with me that they're not shit.
How many of them are in the band?
But, like, all of them like music with trumpets in them, which is, you know, not you and Adam. So,
not anybody. Fucking hell.
I think that their live shows certainly colour the memory that I've got of them, because there are some pretty bland songs on that album, but also like that last song really, like I used that last song for the last or the second last song for the bed for the track last week, and I was listening back to it on headphones, and the way that they really sort of would ebb and flow a show was something that really impressed me with them. And I would imagine Nine Inch Nails are a bit like that live.
I thought you picked that track to underline your conclusion at the end that it wasn't a classic album, because that last track, that track was fucking awful. It just sort of wombled off and then, oh, we'll just wank off for something else. We used to have a music teacher who used to describe anybody playing for their own pleasure and not in time with the rest of the class as wanking. So stop wanking up the back if you people are sort of tooling around on the bass guitar or something, or on the drums. Nothing that this band didn't do anything other than wanking, which is why they're trash.
Yeah, I realize there's...
Because I know that you've tweeted during the week that you felt like you should have defended them more. If you try, I'm just going to keep smacking you down until you understand this band. They're bad.
They're not bad. They're a fucking awesome band. They are fucking a really good band. I think this band, more than any other band...
No, they have competent musicians. Like, I saw your boy Connolly trying to go up. Anyone who says that they're not great musicians, I'm like, that's not the point. Bad band. Bad recordings.
No.
Annoying live band.
No. Absolutely not. I think this band, more than any other band, more than, like, you know, we have areas where we agree, the Beatles, for instance, but this band highlights the differences in our tastes more than any other band.
Yes. It's binary difference between having it, me, and not you.
People, it's on the t-shirt. So if you would like to agree with Doc, go and buy a t-shirt. And
putting the lettering on the t-shirt makes it cost twice as much.
That's right. But hey, if you believe that the Cat Emperor are a bad band,
you have to pay twice as much. This is bullshit. This is second class citizens. We have to pay twice as much. Anyway, you've picked Nine Inch Nails because...
Yes, and I will delete the... you know, special edition second album off it.
Oh, Christ, yes.
We do not do that.
But they did, a follow-up album in period called Further Down the Spiral, didn't they? And that was like remixes and shit. So that's a legitimate continuation. It's not like, but it's more... It's more when they just do, like, here's 47 unreleased demos of the exact same tracks that were on the album itself.
Well, the second album starts with a remix, and that's not good. So,
is it the remix of Head Like a Hole? Because I actually think the remix of Head Like a Hole was better than the original.
No, it's the remix of Burn from Natural Born Killers.
Good.
All right, Doc. I will see you in person on the beautiful
undisclosed location of undisclosed location.
Yep. Next week, hopefully it's not raining because I think it's flooding there today.
It
so
will be raining because it's Easter
and it
on the undisclosed location coast, and it always rains at Easter in that particular part of the world. And you're Sounds camping, good. So of course it's going to rain.
Yeah, that's right.
Whose plan was this? This is appalling.
Why would I think otherwise? Well, it's a couple of people are turning 40 at that time of year, so we're going to celebrate.
Really? Strange. Who would that be?
No one you know.
Fucking Hulk
Hogan. See you, Doc. Yes. Then no one knows. What does the fox say? What the fox say? What the fuck say? Happy, happy, happy ho. Happy, happy, happy ho. Happy, happy, happy ho. What the fuck say? What the fuck say? Big blue eyes, pointy nose, chasing mice and digging holes. Tiny paws up the hill. Suddenly you're standing still. Your fur is red, so beautiful, like an angel.